complain, although today I'd say is probably the coldest day and probably the most miserable. We've had pretty much rain all day, and, you know, it's about, God, I don't know, maybe 40, 42 or something. But, no, it's been really nice, you know, and usually pretty much low to mid-60s, so it's pretty good.
Cool. Yeah, can't keep playing with that.
Exactly. How about you guys? Lots of snow?
I'm actually in Florida, so no.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah. No, it's been really good. It's been really good these past, like, 2 weeks. It's been, like, 70s, lots of sun, so been enjoying it for sure.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been good. So with that, I think we will get started this evening here. Let me just put on the conference line here. All right, so everyone, you're all in the right place tonight for the call this evening with Cliff English. And Cliff English he's got a pretty impressive coaching resume. In 2002, he's the development coach for the National Training Center in Victoria, Canada. He was a coach at the 2004 Olympics for Samantha McGlone. In 2004, he was also the Canadian Elite Coach of the Year. He's been the elite national team coach for the U.S. from 2006 to 2008. In 2005, 2006, 2007, he was USAT ITU World Champion Elite Team Coach. His resume keeps going on and on. Some of the athletes he has had the chance to coach have been Hunter Kemper, Sarah Haskins, Sarah McClarty, Tim O'Donnell, Mark Freda. The list just keeps going on and on and on. And, you know, so he's basically the man, and we're lucky enough to have him on the call with us tonight. So with that, Cliff, I want to welcome you to the call.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here.
Good deal. All right, so this evening, let's start with our first question here, and that is, how do you get your – I mean, basically you've got a knack for cranking out a lot of guys that, you know, win some impressive races at the world championship level in 70.3, Ironman, ITU, and so my question for you is, how do you get athletes to peak at the right time for a big race?
Basically, in my mind, there's, you know, obviously a lot of components to peaking. So with that in mind, I guess, you know, obviously working with various athletes, whether, you know, different disciplines, that kind of thing, it really comes down to the individual getting to know that athlete extremely well is key. You know, it's one of those things, if you actually develop an athlete, say, from a pretty early age, and then you kind of really get to know the athlete. Obviously, you know, with a lot of coaches and the way careers go, you sometimes end up, you know, getting an athlete that's already had a pretty successful career, and then you start working with them, and you got to kind of fast-track yourself a little bit as to how or what works for that particular athlete. But pretty much in general, I'm a big, I guess, fan of planning. I like planning, but, you know, like all plans, things need to be flexible. I definitely get pretty good with the Excel spreadsheets, you know, so you got it all mapped out, and, you know, you always have to kind of touch base with that plan as you go. And, you know, obviously based on the goals of the athlete, you can kind of figure out where you're going to peak, whether it's a couple times in a year, if it's just, you know, obviously – usually athletes want to do well more than just the one race or extremely well at one race. So, you know, the old single periodization, which is pretty easy to do, is kind of out. So you're kind of looking at, you know, multiple peaks in a year. And so, like I said, it just really makes a big difference when you map it out to begin with. You know, that's kind of what you're doing around this time of the year when you're working with an athlete. You're, you know, obviously you just kind of reviewed how the year went, and you're looking towards the future goals, and you start mapping the plan and putting it all down, and that kind of helps you really, you know, kind of keep track. And then, for me as well, with tapering, is I like to do some trial tapers. You know, so you'd usually choose, like, say, a B or C priority race as well, and you can kind of figure out what works, you know, with the athlete. You know, obviously, when you have the luxury of working with an athlete for multiple years, you do have a pretty good idea what works. But, you know, things are always changing. You know, even as athletes progress and get a little older, things do change, and they don't absorb the training as well, and a drop-down taper doesn't quite work the way it used to when the athlete, you know, you're working with them 7 or 8 years ago, you know, which for me in the case with Sam. It's interesting because I've, you know, worked solely with her since 99, so it's, you know, it's really fun to have that kind of period of time working with an athlete, and you get to see how their body responds over that period of time. But yeah, you know, the trial taper is really key, and then you can kind of figure out, you know, whether some athletes need to come in with a lot of intensity or sometimes maybe a lot less intensity, sometimes a little more volume or a little less. But having worked with pretty much hundreds of athletes and having seen, you know, athletes over the last, I guess, couple of decades, it is amazing. Everyone does taper differently. It's a pretty inexact science, and it's it's something that's always evolving, and you know, so like I said, you know, the timing's pretty key, and that trial is also key. And then I guess coming in at interval, like I said too, it's also figuring out what works for the athletes. But I do like cutting back pretty big on the volume, especially in that final week, say for a short course athlete. You know, you can cut down maybe 50% of volume, but keep, you know, some pretty good sharpening. The other things that I like to do, too, for athletes in a taper, and especially even, you know, say sometimes even 2 weeks or 3 weeks out, especially if it's a really key race, like a world championships, a lot of my philosophy on coaching triathlon is about, you know, running fatigue, because that's basically what we need to get used to, is always being preloaded with the run. What I kind of like to do 2 or 3 weeks out is to flip around some of the sessions and actually allow the athlete to, you know, to maybe have a run first thing in a day, to actually be fresh for a session, and they can start getting some confidence in that. So I pay a lot of attention to that psychological component as well when you start getting closer to a race, because, you know, obviously you don't want the athlete to, you know, to be just getting absolutely thrashed and feeling no confidence, and are only 4 days out. You know, you kind of do some sets that you know they're going to get a hold of and feel pretty good about themselves. So there's definitely that aspect that I take into account as well, too.
Cool. All right. Great. All right. And my next question for you then is, how do you get athletes to run faster off the bike?
Okay. Pretty much, I guess it will get into a little bit of some of the things for my coaching philosophy, but basically, very simple principle or scientific principle of training is specificity. It's one of my favorite words. it just makes sense. You know, if there's ever a word that really is key, not only for training but for our sport, when you figure swim, bike, run. You know, I mean, it's daunting to think of, not, you know, obviously just preparing for any one of those events, but obviously putting all three together is extremely challenging. And when you're looking to perform in those, your training has to be extremely dialed in and very specific to our sport, which is swim, bike, and run. So, you know, pretty simple philosophy, but it really comes down to, what are you preparing for? You know, even how do you plan the race? You know, if you're looking, if you're a 33-minute 10K runner and you know, you're hoping to run within 30 to 60 seconds of your fresh 10K, you know, how are you going to prepare to do that, you know? And you definitely have a plan. So obviously, for me, it's just very specific training sessions. So the combo sessions, you know, bike runs, even some extremely, I guess, challenging sessions, such as using your CompuTrainer with a treadmill right next to it. That's one of my favorite sessions that, you know, not every athlete's into the treadmill, but definitely a lot of the athletes I was coaching at the National Training Center, Sarah Haskins, even Hunter, is a huge treadmill fan, and definitely we've done lots of CompuTrainer sessions, and then just getting right on to, like, a nice tempo run on the treadmill. And I think the big thing is also, you know, getting that bike strength now enable you to run well off the bike. And then, like I said, the specific training, because you just basically have to do the work, which also sounds simple too. But basically, one of my favorite sets for off the bike used to always be a 5K, basically time trial, like a tempo at your 10K effort. And then 3 to 4 times 1K is with just about maybe 75 to 90 seconds. And you know, it's not too much hiding in a session like that. And that was a set that I remember Sam doing back in the summer of 2004, just maybe 3 weeks out from when she made the Olympic team for Canada. And she ran a sub, you know, off a really hard bike. I had some athletes out there just, like, attacking, or a bunch of guys just keeping the pace really hard. Came right off, then went right into it, you know, just with maybe a couple minutes, you know, stretching, and ran a sub 17-minute 5K, and then went basically, you know, 4 by 1Ks descending to a 309 1K. So we kind of knew she was ready.
But, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know, but I've definitely done that with a lot of my guys, and I just think those are pretty good sets. The other thing for long course athletes, you know, same thing. It's just getting into, and it's much easier for a coach to give the athlete this, because a self-coached athlete would probably never want to give themselves these workouts. But, you know, just like I said, the longer intervals at your race pace, and there's just no hiding. So a lot of my long course athletes have seen, you know, tempo runs that might be, you know, 12-minute, 15-minute, 25-minute blocks at a certain pace on the run, and you can even quantify it with, you know, 5Ks, 10Ks. We basically, for Sam last year at Kona, built up to basically a 30K time trial, which she was running at, you know, a 240-mile pace, so 6:30 per mile, and, you know, she basically started with 3 by 40 minutes, so 3 by 10K, and built it up to just, you know, there you go. So, you know, that obviously wasn't off the bike. That was, you know, the day after a really long day. But, you know, you definitely, that's a large part of it is in the training. And then once again, obviously when athletes are seeing that they're doing in training, then, you know, it does transfer over to the race day, you know. And then, you know, obviously there are some things that arise, and you have to work a little bit with mental skills and confidence and that kind of thing. But usually, you know, and of course pacing, that's a big thing too. I mean, the ITU style racing is definitely challenging for athletes to, you know, to get out there and to actually get into their own run. You know, a lot of those races we see 50, 60 men or you know, 50 women jumping off the bike together, and then it's a 10K race, and that's hard because you actually want to go with the people that are leading, you know, but not anyone can go with a Hunter, or not anyone can go with an Emma Snowsill. And, you know, a lot of people do get kind of pulled into that, and their first kilometer will just be blazing, and then they usually end up having a pretty solid positive split. So you definitely have to, you know, when it comes to the race, really work with what is the game plan. I did that a lot with Sarah Haskins, you know, and I really think, you know, obviously she's going to be, you know, an athlete for the future. And you know, it's the same thing with Julie when I was working with her with the U.S. team. It's just, you know, this is – your race plan, this is your pace that you need to hold. And, you know, they got really good at it, and it's sometimes hard ego-wise to let someone get away from you, but they could always come back to you, you know. And I think, you know, until you're running 33 or 34, you know, instead of going toe-to-toe, you have to race smart, you know.
Yeah, definitely. All right. And, you know, obviously with the athletes, they're going to have their strengths and weaknesses within the disciplines of triathlon. So how do you judge calculating how much time someone should spend training within each, you know, discipline according to their strengths and weaknesses?
Okay, that's a really big question. But yeah, you know, obviously once again, you know, it just comes down to the individual. A lot of times too, if you did have, say, like a process goal, like a, you know, a male athlete wants to do ITU racing and they're a 19:30 swimmer, then it's pretty, you know, that's pretty straightforward. You know, you're like, all right, you know what? What's the first race you're thinking of doing? Is it May? Is it April? Then you look at how much time you have, and then, you know, you might be the goal along the way we'd like to hit is taking a minute off his 1500 time. So maybe, you know, if we're really lucky, and I've never worked with this athlete before, and, you know, hypothetically speaking here, of course, and I'm able to pick out a few things with a swim stroke, and, you know, maybe in 8 weeks we've gotten a minute, you know. So then you're like, okay, you know, is you can then consider to continue on to see how much more you can achieve in that training, you know, macro cycle, or you can start, you know, bringing in the two other sports. So I like to also kind of always be very mindful of the big picture and you know, not just what's happening in each annual plan, you know, like especially this is what's exciting, you know, for a lot of coaches that are probably working with athletes that are eyeing, you know, 2012 Olympics, that, you know, obviously you have your, you know, each year and the goals they have and the races they want to do, but at the same time, if you have someone who is that 1930 swimmer, but you want to get them down at 1700 or 1730, you know, you do have 4 years, and you have to kind of work it into the quad and into that, you know, long-term athlete development model that you, you know, you kind of put together. And so that, you know, it does take a lot of thought, and you kind of have to strategize and look at it. And, you know, obviously it is important to have a lot of communication with the athlete and you know, get their goals, and you can use that and figure out, you know, to a certain degree what you need to focus on and how. Obviously, athletes are going to kind of always be a little bit impatient and want it all now. You know, that's just the way it goes. But I think, like I said, it really depends on, you know, on that individual and on the sport. And essentially, you know, what like the different disciplines as well. You know, I think, like I said, it, you know, it is obviously more important for an ITU athlete to really nail that swim. So I would definitely emphasize that and figure out. And, you know, you can definitely keep the other two sports going to a certain degree, but it wouldn't be, you know, as you know, large a percent of the focus on time. But, you know, I would probably only look at a 3-4 month block if I was, you know, developing an ITU athlete, and I've definitely, you know, done that over the years. You know, and you know, obviously that's sometimes one, I guess, luxury of our sport is we can, you know, maintain the others, drop them down a little bit, but we're still working energy systems. So while you're focusing on the bike, you're still developing, you know, huge aerobic capacity. So you're not going to lose that. But, you know, I definitely over the years have tried a lot of different things. And even when I was an athlete quite a few years ago, you know, I used to just, you know, try to get my swim up to another level and not touch my bike for an entire 2 months. And, you know, you can definitely make some gains, and you're always going to be able to retain a certain bit of those gains. What I guess complicates things is you know, athletes do have to race. They have to, you know, especially professionals, they need to make a living, so they always have to, you know, keep races in mind and can't take too much time. And always feels like you're on this treadmill all the time. And it's definitely something when I've worked for federations that I've always hoped I can kind of change, you know, so athletes don't always have to make a national team every year, that we can actually have a program and be like, hey, you know, you just develop. You just do what you got to do to become a world-fast runner like Hunter, or, you know, a McLarty-style swimmer. We're behind you. We believe, you know, you've got the ability to be one of how many people that can go to Olympics in 4 years. We're behind you, you know, and I think that kind of forward thinking isn't really there in too many federations yet. It's slowly coming, you know, but I think that, you know, from that perspective of high performance, that would make things a lot easier instead of trying to make all the gains in 1 3- or 4-month block without missing out on a season. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It does. That was good.
It's one of the challenges.
yeah, it's complex.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, with age groupers, there's so much, you know, it definitely is easier. And, you know, you just have to make those short-term goals and set out and figure out the strategy to achieve them, and then, you know, piece it all together for the try.
Sure. And so the next question I have for you is, how do you regulate athletes in knowing if they're training too much or too little? You know, that kind of line right there, that can be kind of tricky as well, as you know.
Oh, absolutely. I guess I've done all styles of coaching. I mean, I've been pretty fortunate for pretty much all my career. I've always been a, you know, hands-on, on the pool deck kind of coach. I've always coached either, you know, a university club, a squad, a national team. So, you know, it really enables you to get to know your athletes, you know, on a daily basis. Like, you know, at one point, I could tell the foot strikes of all my runners. You know, I'd be like, hey, you're a little tired there today. You know, Brian Fleischman, he's like, yeah, I didn't sleep so well. But I could tell how he, you know, how he lands on the ground or on the mountain bike. I can hear those things.
Mm.
You know, whether it's fatigue, you know, from the microcycle, you know, that kind of thing. But you get to see you and how the athlete carries himself on the pool deck, you know, are they dragging? Are they, you know, you can see those things a little bit. And once you get to really know athletes, it's good. I mean, I think it's one thing that I think has been very helpful, even for the relationship I've had with Sam. You know, it's I'm probably extremely annoying at times too, because, you know, I remember one of my good friends, Joel Filial, we used to always talk about that at times. And, you know, you'd be like, you know, your wife like sneezes and you're like, hey, you're getting sick, you know, but you can always be a little too on top of your athletes. But
it's good to keep an eye, and if you do have the opportunity to see them, you know, every day, it does, you know, give you that opportunity to see how they look, and that you could read a lot from that when you get to know an athlete. The more challenging side is the online coaching, obviously, and you know, with that, you know, obviously we have great tools such as like Training Peaks, and there's some great you know, logs that athletes can fill in, and that's, you know, for me, I always try to either, you know, talk to athlete, you know, a couple times a week or once a week, or definitely email a lot, you know, and get that, you know, information from them. I think the big thing is, you know, sometimes if you, as a coach, you start suspecting that maybe someone's doing some extra, or, you know, if you kind of get any kind of hints of that, it's definitely the conversation you have to have. Like, I've been coaching long enough that I know that I'm not doing the athlete any favors if I let things like that go by, or if I can't actually, you know, sometimes just be brutally honest, you know, which is the hard thing to do, but sometimes you need to, you know, just be like, hey, you know what, I'm going to call you on this. you know, I think you're, you know, either the load is too much or you're doing something else, or what's going on here. And, you know, sometimes the athlete will, you know, you don't want to do it too confrontationally, but, you know, you basically, the way I always do it is just explain it that, you know, we're a team. We're working together. If we're not connected, if we don't are not on the same page, then it's not going to work, you know. And we're essentially working towards the same thing. And I guess, you know, a lot of it does take time to build that relationship with an athlete. You know, you need the trust and the communication, and it's not going to happen in a week or two. It's going to take some time. But, yeah, that's basically it. You know, I've pretty much – trying to think. You know, what was funny about the U.S. team was there were some athletes that were always getting in a little extra, you know, and after the thing with that sometimes helped is some of their teammates were pretty good spies. So that was never good, but there was always a couple of athletes that always loved to come tell me, like, hey, you know who I saw going out for a second run? And you're like, oh, no. But that always happens every once in a while. But you know, like I said, it's a relationship that's really important between athlete and coach, and it really needs to work. And I think, you know, having that conversation, you know, especially with an athlete, if they're hiring you, then, you know, you're like, let's get the most out of this, you know, and let's make sure you perform. And so, you know, we need to know exactly what's going on. And, you know, I try to get really, you know, I just almost feel that you need to know the athlete better than they know themselves, you know, and just be like, what are you eating? What did you try? You know, if you're always having to run to take a potty break before every track session, let's examine when your last meal was. Are you eating a little too close, you know, for the key runs? And maybe you need to adjust that compared to when you do your long, easy run. It doesn't matter, you know, because the intensity isn't as high and you can eat right in front, you know. So just little things where you kind of have to get into it, you know, and, you know, get to the nitty-gritty stuff with the athletes.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. And Cliff, you got some camps, right? That you're coaching. Why don't you tell us how people can get a hold of, like, get to one of those camps that you're going to be holding out there in Arizona, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. In spring 2009, I have three camps in Tucson, Arizona. It's an awesome place to train. it's probably one of the best place is my mind for biking. I mean, it's just so much variety from, you know, you can do flats, you can do sharp, steep hills, long hills. You have the infamous Mount Lemmon down here, 26 miles in a national park on, like, beautiful blacktop, and it's just a nice, steady 3% grade. So I basically put together three camps. I really wanted to add some variety with these. So my first one is, like, February 28th to March 5th, and it's kind of like a miles madness, so it's really Ironman geared, getting in big bike miles. We're going to hit some pretty amazing rides. We're also going to hit another one called Kitt Peak, which is going to be probably about a good 100 to 110-mile ride, and it has a 12-mile climb in the middle that goes up to an observatory, and that's a great climb, and, of course, Lemmon. So in that camp, we're going to have myself, Sam McGlone, of course, and another great coach, Paul Cross. And we should also have Matt Reed, and we might even have a few other guests that are going to bring in. And then the second camp is a women-specific camp. We want to do something just for women. We'll be staying at a pretty cool upscale resort, the JW Marriott, here in Tucson. And, yeah, you know, just this one is going to be pretty neat because I brought in Sharon Donnelly, who's a good friend of mine, and she was a former athlete herself, 1999 Pan Am triathlete champion. And She was also a U.S. coach with me, and she was the assistant Olympic coach. And, of course, we're going to have Sam. We're also a close friend of mine, Bobby McGee, one of the best run coaches that I know, Olympic gold medalist coach. And so it's going to be a really nice camp, and just it should have a whole different feel, just, you know, very woman-specific, and with, you know, the female coach and also Sam. We really want to get into, you know, some of the training-specific needs of females, you know. And then the third camp is an Olympic distance base camp. So it's good for anyone that Olympic distance, Ironman, half Ironman, pretty much. And same thing, we're going to have Bobby McGee, Matt Reed, of course, Sam, myself, Sharon Donnelly, Paul Cross. So we're just really trying to bring in a lot of, you know, great pro athletes, so, you know, the campers can get to know them, learn from them, great coaches. And we also have some demos. So Zip is going to be present at all three camps. We also have Specialized, Argon 18. So it's going to be some pretty fun stuff. And we have Zoot as well involved. And, yeah, I'm really excited about these camps. And yeah, you can go to my website.
Yes, yes, yes. What's your website?
www.cliffenglishcoaching.com.
All right, good deal. You guys can definitely check that out. Sounds pretty sweet for sure. All right, let me ask you this question. So, you know, you've had a lot of massive success in training a lot of the top athletes out there in the world. So what are the common principles that you found, if anything, or strategies that you've used with all these athletes to kind of help them get to their peak and do well?
All right. Well, with this, I basically this is another really big one, and I'll break it into I guess two categories. You know, one, when you're say developing an athlete that you get at a pretty say like young training age, like a junior triathlete or something, and then I'll also talk a little more shortly about, you know, when you get someone who's already pretty well developed and what you can do with them. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically starting off with you know, developing an athlete. It's, once again, it kind of comes into the planning thing. You know, you do have to kind of step back, look at the big picture, you know, start, there's a lot of writing, a lot of, you know, just developing these annual plans and quads, you know, and just looking at a long-term development plan and just getting an idea, you know, of where this athlete, you know, is planning or wants to go, and whether they're, you know, just a junior or an age group or, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, obviously, you know, that the long-term thing, you know, would probably be more applicable to an elite athlete, especially if they're a junior and they have aspirations of being an Olympian, you know. So, you know, for most age groupers, you know, that may not totally apply. But, yeah, there's what is pretty fun when you do develop an athlete, you know, which is quite young in training age, there's I guess a few things I like to look at. You're basically trying to develop that complete athlete. So you're trying to develop a lot of different, I like to call them competencies, like or characteristics. So you're not only developing the energy systems, the physical and the strength, like structural, but, you know, over a period of time, that's why you need to kind of make a little bit of a plan. There's just so much I feel you can impart to an athlete at a certain rate. When I was working with Jasmine Onik, who is, you know, two-time silver medalist, U23 athlete, and a really great athlete. And what I did notice, though, with her is you had a little window, and when you're talking about tactics, you know, and mental skills and psychology, but then you just hit a point where it's too much, you know, and I think that sometimes, you know, as coaches, you know, we get a little too excited, and we want to give everything right away, you know, and you do have to, it's a little bit of my, with developing athletes too, that you it's a bit of the I call it campfire theory. You know, you're kind of out there in the woods and you get a little fire going, you get a little spark, and then you get excited and you throw on all the wood and it goes out. You know, it's pretty much the same thing, and you can you know, burn an athlete out, or you give them too much and they look like a deer in headlights after 15 minutes, you know, and they're just like, all, you know, they got so much floating in their head and, you know, they don't know what's going on, they can't think for themselves anymore. So I was kind of looked at like, you have to, you know, look at the individual, and some people have a great capacity, you know, for learning and just sponge it in, you know, and others, it's like, you know, it's a little slower and it takes time and trial and error, and they really learn, you know, through going through some mistakes and that kind of thing. So I kind of look at all those components, you know, and I even as a coach like to develop life skills, self-sufficiency, so they can actually be out there in Japan and, you know, not freak out if a shuttle didn't pick them up and they're the only person that they can get and find a way to the hotel. And, you know, there's definitely a lot to be learned when you're out there traveling, you know, as a national team member on the World Cup circuit. And you definitely want to, you know, prepare your athlete for that. And I know, you know, there's definitely quite a few coaches that I think have a similar philosophy. And, you know, when I started coaching, I wasn't able to travel to every race. My athletes, I just couldn't afford to. So, you know, I wanted to make sure, you know, they were fine when they were there, you know. So I remember, you know, 8 years ago, Sam had, you know, duplicate parts for all her bikes when she's going all around the world. And, you know, she just had everything she needed, you know, and knew how to use it. So you definitely look at those skills, you know, like I said, especially when you're working with a younger athlete that you're developing. You know, you can look at all those components being a complete athlete. So that's one thing that's pretty exciting, and I guess that I look at when I'm developing an athlete. Obviously, you know, someone later in the career has quite a few of those things there. And, you know, and sometimes there's some challenges because you might have to rewire them a little bit, you know, and maybe there are some bad habits, you know. So I think that brings me to my next point. When I do work with athletes, I do like to instill some good habits. I guess my philosophy is I like my athletes to be conscious of what they're doing, to kind of go away from that mindset of just hammering, just getting in the workout, you know, that, you know, and this can be applied to age groupers all the way through to elite athletes, you know, that if you only have 15 hours in a week as an age grouper to train, I'd say you're probably better off spending 12 hours training and, you know, the other few hours, you know, taking the time to maybe prepare food for recovery. If you're rushing off to work, you got a smoothie ready, you know, or, you know, that you take a little more time to get a good cool down or a good warm up and you don't just jump into it. You know, be conscious of what you're doing. Actually think about the run form. What are you preparing for this key track session? You know, those kind of little things. And I think, you know, those are obviously things that as a coach of many elites, those are things that I've kind of brought into to my philosophy of just, you know, a lot of when you're doing repetition, obviously our sports are very repetitive, very cyclical. So, you know, obviously you think of how many times in a you know, 5K swim set you're repeating a bad stroke, you know. So, you know, a lot of what you prepare your athlete for through the training is it should be deliberate practice, you know, always running a good run with good run form, you know, maybe reinforcing that swim stroke or run form at the end of a session when they're fatigued with some drills, you know, those kind of things. So, you know, and you can definitely periodize it a little bit too, a little more, you know, obviously in the off season when you're, you know, say really trying to iron out that swim skill and or a certain component of your stroke, you know, and that's when that philosophy of, you know, deliberate practice, being conscious of what you're doing comes in. I guess some of the other things that I like to do, too, is it really is about the details, and it goes all the way down into the training, you know, everything you do. The other thing I like doing, too, is getting my athletes and teaching them to have a good pre-session routine, and that kind of works into, you know, them having a pre-race routine that they know if they had a time trial that they come on deck a little earlier, they do what they need to do, they've kind of found out the stretches, the dynamic stretching that works for them. And they have this routine that they've sorted out for themselves, you know, with my help and, you know, that kind of thing. Let me see. So, yeah, that's a little bit of, I guess, how I have kind of come up with some of the principles. Let me see. I guess with some of the other athletes that, you know, I've gotten along the years that you know, I've helped out, or sometimes you just do like consulting, like even, you know, back a few years ago, I did a little help. I used to coach Peter Reed for a few years with his swim, and then, you know, just every once in a while, kind of help him a little bit with his planning and periodization and that. But, you know, there's always, I guess, a good use, you know, for a coach where we're outside set of eyes, you know, that can, you know, take a look at what they're doing and give them, you know, the lowdown of what we see, you know, and we can be very beneficial for that. And I think, you know, sometimes with an athlete that's been doing it a long time, and I definitely had with, you know, Matt Reed when I worked with him, and Laura Bennett, and Hunter Kemper, and all these guys when I was with the U.S. team, you know, they some of them are very set in their ways, you know, and but at the same time, you don't really have to always kind of reinvent the wheel, you know, just go new. What I always kind of looked at was, how can I improve their game? They're already at this level. What can, you know, maybe there's something in a little detail and, you know, that kind of thing. And I also kind of looked at it sometimes and maybe there's something I spot and that would actually get a little buy-in for me. I mean, that was, you know, you can't just kind of come up, you know, these guys that are obviously, you know, some of the best athletes in the world and be like, hey, you're doing that all wrong. You know, there's a certain way to approach them with it, you know, and I'd kind of like, you know, observe something and then, you know, and it's just interesting, you know, over the years that, you know, they, you became someone that they trusted, you know, and I remember even in 2005 at the World Championships for ITU and Gamagori, you know, and it's really nice. I mean, Laura after was like, Laura Bennett was like, man, you know, it's like I really owe a large part of that race to you, you know. She's like, you know, I came to you before and I was like, hey, what do you think with the swim? And she's like, you know, this is a really technical bike course. It had something like 19 turns per lap and it was like 6 or 7 laps. And, you know, she's like, I'm really, you know, a little longer, a little lankier, you know, I don't accelerate well. And, you know, so I was like, I'd taken a look at, you know, the pontoon start, and I kind of had an idea where was a good place to start. And she, you know, she's like, I had the best swim of my life. I was right there with Sheila and Barb. And so she, you know, that was perfect for her, great position. And same thing on the bike, you know, it's like, well, you know, you can control the pace through the turns. Like, if you have a hard time getting up out of the saddle and accelerating when someone's at the front accelerating, if you kind of come through, then you can control the speed of what they come through, and then you can get up to speed at your own pace because it's such a narrow technical course. And she did that to a T. She just kind of led through most of the turns, and, you know, no one got away from her, and she had, like, a brilliant run, and it was another podium performance for her, you know. And so it's, you know, and obviously, you know, then when you do kind of, you know, come up with some good things, and then they really see the value. So it's, I've always you know, made sure that you can, you know, come up with things that are helpful and valuable and you know, helpful to a lot of, you know, say if you are working with an athlete who's been in it for a long time.
Cool. All right. That was great. So this next question I got for you, it's a little more specific than the other ones, but basically it has to do with cadence. And is there an ideal cadence, you know, in cycling and in running? And, you know, how do those kind of translate into one another? Do they affect each other? What are your thoughts on that?
All right. Well, you know, it should be pretty simple. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes for me, I think sometimes it's like the more you know and the more people you work with, sometimes things become almost more complicated. But, you know, like I was just saying previously, you know, if you are working with someone who, you know, it has been doing it, say, for 12, 15 years as a top professional, you're like, wow, you know, you're maybe 85 cadence is 85 cadence, you know, and that's it, you know. Like, it's I've definitely seen that a little bit with some, you know, some of the swim strokes I've worked with, too. You're like, oh, it's working. You're swimming on Andy Potts' feet. You know, we'll just maybe overlook the fact that, you know, it could probably use a little work, you know.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the run and I guess, you know, there definitely has been, you know, some research, and I definitely, you know, I'm more of a higher RPM kind of, I guess, advocate. I definitely believe in that window of, you know, 85 to 105 RPM for both sports. I mean, obviously there's going to be, you know, a lot of variances, you know, depending on, you know, the discipline. So long course people, a little lower. Also depends a lot on, you know, your stature, how tall are you, how short are you, that kind of thing. Although, you know, it's interesting because I think if we're a short course athlete, I know a lot of people, say off the, you know, top of their heads would be like, hey, Hunter Camper, he's 6'2", 6'3". I mean, what would you think his cadence is if he's just doing an easy jog, like, you know, 8-minute mile pace? What would you say?
90?
Good guess. Yeah, he's about a 94 to 96 cadence at, like, the slowest pace you've ever seen, just jogging around a park.
Yeah, I know a lot of Kenyans are like that, too, actually. Like,
exactly.
The top Kenyan runners. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that's, you know, in my mind, you know, it's always like doing that cadence little test and seeing some of the people run. And, you know, like I said, a lot of people just think, oh, well, I'm 6'2", and I run, you know, at 80, and that's just the way it is. But I think that really, really, the cadence on a bike and the cadence in a run for triathlon makes so much more sense. You know, you're much more efficient in with higher cadence. In the run, I mean, you just have to look at, say, a 10K time, and as the cadence slows in the later stages of the race, to start overstriding, then your heel striking more, and you're just getting more resistance, and it just slows you down. So, you know, it really – in my mind, you know, everything kind of points towards, you know, finding that nice little window and what's optimal for that athlete. I mean, I know Dina Castor runs at around 108 to 110 cadence, but I mean, not everyone's going to be, you know, coming off doing that, although Emma Snoso is probably pretty darn close. But definitely, you know, it's definitely good to for each athlete and for coaches to take a look at the cadence of their athletes and you know, and also if you are doing time trials or, you know, or key tempo runs off the bike, take a look, you know, every 5 to 10 minutes, how much is that cadence changing? Did they come off and they're running, you know, 6 minute mile pace for the first mile and a 5K time trial and, you know, they're holding 96 cadence and then in the second mile it drops to 90 and then in the third mile it drops to 85 and it's definitely, you know, obviously something to work on and to improve. And, yeah, so in my mind, like I said, a higher cadence is good, but obviously, you know, there's definitely times to build strength, especially on a bike. So I do like, you know, low cadence, big gear work, you know, that kind of thing. But pretty much on a year-round basis, I always like to do strides or, you know, accelerations on a bike run. And I think it's really good to stay in touch with that higher turnover, and it's very key.
Cool. All right. Great. Another question we got here is basically to do with weight training. You know, a lot of people have a lot of opinions on this. And, you know, so basically, you know, weight training, what's the deal? Do triathletes need it? You know, will they bulk up too much? Is it just for weightlifters? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a very important fourth sport to what we do. And, you know, depending on the program, I would say, you know, in some cases, you know, athletes won't bulk up, but, you know, once again, there's going to be individual variances. You know, some athletes might be very prone to, you know, gaining, you know, or like, you know, getting some hypertrophy going on and gaining some muscle mass. So, you know, sometimes an athlete will warn you about that. I've had a few over the years that are like, hey, I can, like, you know, looking at a push-up or looking at a squat rack, I'll gain muscle mass. And so, you know, obviously, you know, you can work around it and make sure to, you know, monitor the program. You know, obviously higher reps, you know, that kind of thing are really key. I definitely like using it. I definitely periodize it to my annual plan. So I definitely think I'm probably – there are some coaches that might be a little more into strength training, and I know there are some that are probably a lot less. I'm probably not a huge – what would be the word? I guess advocate of say, you know, some really big Olympic lifts. And, you know, I always get, you know, especially if you have a group, you know, sometimes it gets competitive. You have to be really careful with that. But I think, you know, I definitely really like my athletes to work closely with a physio, so they can kind of look at the body, see if there's imbalances. You know, I like my strength training for that. I like my strength training to kind of, you know, make sure the core is strong. I think it's really, you know, definitely very important for the work in swim, bike, and run that we put the body through, that the athletes are strong, you know, physically and do have a strong core, a strong back. This will obviously really transfer nicely to the race. You know, I really believe it does limit breakdown in your form. Obviously, it does help, you know, prevent injury. But, you know, the later stages of you know, races, this is where, you know, having that foundation, having that strength is really key. I do periodize it. I like it to fit into my annual plan. Sometimes in heavier weeks, I might back off a little on the strength training. You know, obviously, when I am doing strength training in a weight room, I am, you know, in the off-season, in this, you know, sort of like the general preparation phase, which we're in basically January, February, March kind of thing. I also like doing a lot of sport-specific strength, too. So that can be, you know, hill running. I definitely in the pool, band work, paddle work, tether work. And the same thing on a bike, you know, hills, low gear, you know, big gear kind of work, low cadence stuff is also really good. And then, obviously, as you get towards, you know, the race season, then your weight program will take a different shape. You know, it'll be a little quicker. I like to keep my athletes in very short anyway. So, you know, 30 minutes, 2-3 times a week. And then obviously you can kind of have a bit of on the road, because there's been times I've had athletes that are on the road for 4 to 6 weeks traveling race to race. So, you know, obviously in race weeks, I usually like to drop off no weight, you know, or no strength, and then, you know, obviously if they're on a camp and they might not have access to a strength facility, you know, I make sure I have a program that can be done with stretch cords or, you know, something they can just do in the hotel room. And I'm also a really big believer of stretch cords. Like, I love strength or sport-specific strength. So that kind of becomes a little bit of a pre-swim routine for my athletes, that they do a stretch cord routine, and it really helps activate the muscles. And at the same time, it really, you know, you get really good strength endurance from those kind of exercises. So, yeah, I'm all for it.
Cool. Good stuff. All right, we got a little bit of time left here. We got a few people asking some questions online here. Do you want to take a crack at a few questions?
Sure.
All right, good deal. We got Dave from Cincinnati, and he wants to know a little bit about training hard versus getting injured and setting realistic goals.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Good question, Dave. Training hard and getting injured. All right, I guess, you know, it definitely is a fine balance. Progression, I'd say, is probably one of the biggest kind of principles of training that you basically need to follow with that. You know, it's sort of, you want to kind of come in, like, say if you have your goal and you're like, okay, I want to run a certain 5K or 10K or half marathon, you know, that kind of thing, and then so many weeks out, you know, you're planning your training leading up to that. You want to start, if you're doing, whether they're intervals or tempo or, you know, hard training, basically, you want to have a progression, you know, kind of like a week to week or a microcycle to microcycle. You definitely want to start, say, if you're like, oh, I want to run a 38-minute 10K and you're currently a 40-minute 10K runner and you're giving yourself 16 weeks or, you know, that kind of time to do it, you know, you're definitely, let me see here, that's about maybe a 6:10 per mile pace and a 6:30. Okay, so yeah. So, you know, you maybe build up, you know, slowly with your intervals, start with something, you know, manageable, you know, make sure you're at your 40K pace shape, and then you can start, you know, slowly getting into that 6:10 or 6:15 per mile pace through, you know, smaller intervals at first, you know, some tempo runs that are maybe just a little easier than the pace, and you build yourself up slowly. I think the big thing is sometimes people just continuously build. Sometimes, you know, after a while you look back and you're like, wow, I just did 6 weeks and I just kept adding and adding and adding, and your body needs to adapt. And basically that's the principle of overload, is that you progressively give yourself a load, and that's training and intensity. You build up and then you have to unload. You need to recover and rejuvenate and adapt to that training load. So there's different patterns that, you know, people will do. They'll do 2 weeks build, 1 week unload. Sometimes they'll do 3 weeks and one unload. I find when you're doing a lot of intense work, usually it's better to do even like a 10-day cycle with 4 days off, or even 2 weeks and 1 week. I really prefer the two and one. Usually when you're doing like aerobic base, like just longer, you know, easier, less intense training, you can do the 3 week build, 1 week unload kind of thing. But I find that as an athlete myself, quite a few years ago, and then many athletes I've worked with, there is some breakdown that happens at 2.5 weeks, you know, and so you don't want to kind of go over the edge and start getting those, you know, low signs of being overreached, where you're, you know, really irritable, you're not recovering, you're not sleeping, you know, that kind of thing. So I think, you know, keeping good log, keeping track of it, giving yourself you know, really kind of systematic overload, but definitely making sure you unload as well is really key with that. Yeah, I think hopefully that helps.
Yeah, cool. I think you did a good job with that one for sure. All right, Roger from Miami, Florida wants to know, other than heart rate monitors, do you use power meters in coaching for training and racing?
All right, good question. Definitely, you know, sometimes it would vary per athlete and for many different, you know, reasons. You know, sometimes financially, an athlete just can't afford to have all those, you know, great tools, and there's so many out there. They're definitely good, and as a coach, and especially, you know, working with, say, with an athlete, you know, online, you know, the more information you can get, it definitely is helpful. It's all really good feedback. So I like heart rate. I really do. I'm a little old school as well. Like, I like perceived exertion. You know, I like an athlete to get to know, like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, that's 10K effort, you know. And but, you know, obviously be realistic with it, you know. If they're running, you know, a 4:30 per mile pace and they're telling me it's 10K effort, you know, unless they're Gebre Selassie, you're like, hey, I don't think you got a good feel for it. But and I have seen that before. But, you know, definitely, you know, between heart rate, between, you know, going out there and either doing time trials and races, I mean, that's the thing that's so great about running, you know. It's, hey, where am I at? Okay, let's find a local 5 or 10K, and we'll know exactly where you're at. You put a heart rate monitor on, you can get the numbers you need. Pretty easy to figure out threshold, and then you can figure out, you know, some numbers from there, you know, lower end training zones, higher end training zones, you know, in a way you go. So, and then at the same time running the 10K, you get a pretty good idea for the feel what that perceived exertion is, you know, and correlate that to your threshold and to your heart rates for that. So, you know, running's pretty simple with that. Biking, same thing, you know, having, you know, the watts, whether it's PowerTap, CompuTrain, or SRM, is very helpful. I think it's good, you know, definitely on the bike, you know, watts can, you know, especially if the power meter is, well, you know, it's calibrated, it's quite accurate. Heart rates, as we all know, can fluctuate a little bit, so that's why if you're only using heart rate, I like to use it a little bit with perceived exertion as well. But, you know, wattages, heart rate zones, and perceived exertion really dials in a session. You know, there's no hiding in it. It's really specific, and it's a very key session. So I do like using that when the athlete has that available. Racing with it is really it really depends on the athlete. You know, I definitely think there's, you know, some athletes that probably shouldn't have that, and sometimes, you know, you can tend to overthink. You know, there's a little thing we sometimes say, you know, paralysis by analysis. Sometimes it's just a little too much of that going on, and, you know, you have to just trust in the training that you did and just race. And a lot of the athletes that I coach will race, you know, without power, you know, or you tape it up. Like, there's been a few times, like with Sam, we'll tape it up and just see. But she's raced most of her career. We use CompuTrain a lot for training, and we definitely really like that tool. But she's raced every single race, including Kona last year, just off of feel, no nothing, no speedometer, nothing. but she's got an extremely innate ability to kind of know her pace, and it's usually pretty much just all out, but no, not all the time. But She's pretty good with that, and you know, a lot of athletes can learn that. But I think for, you know, sometimes for, you know, some beginner athletes, it's not bad to actually maybe start a little bit with it and you know, to get a feel, to kind of pace yourself through, you know, if it's your first half and you just don't know, it's not a bad guideline, so you don't get, you know, caught up in the opening few miles and find yourself holding 500 watts or something, you know. So I think that can be a good tool. But like I said, it really depends on the athlete too.
Yeah, great. And we get another question here. Mark from Madison, I guess that would be Madison, Wisconsin, says, what dry land work, weights, bands, et cetera, are beneficial for someone developing a better swimming stroke?
All right. So with the stretch cords, you know, you can definitely get varying tensions of stretch cords, and I like starting with, like, a pretty lighter tension. Some of the ones, and it's hopefully the descriptions will be pretty universal, but what I do like is, you know, starting off with, I call them monkey bars, but they're basically alternating arm swings, so front and back. So you basically, you know, you'll kind of stand, bend your knees slightly, kind of hunch your back over, hold your core in, so kind of suck it in a little bit, engage the core, and then you're just going to be going, you know, left arm up in front, so almost to the point where if I'm looking, you know, maybe at the ground at a 30-degree angle, I can't see my hand anymore, and just kind of go front to back with that and just alternate with the right arm. The thing that's really good about using the stretch cords for swimming is really make sure you hold the same kind of position that you would when you swim, so that would include when you're swimming, you have that little bit, that internal rotation of the shoulder, you know, and then people talk about, you know, popping your elbow up and your shoulders up as well. So you want to kind of hold the same kind of arm position with the muscles, you know, you're trying to engage a little bit of your back muscles as well with that. So the alternating arms is a good one. I also like the double arm pull through. So same thing, both arms out in front and pulling through, kind of finishing with your hands, your thumb almost rubbing against your thigh where we're getting a good finish. That's a nice one. And the lighter the tension, you can do it at a good pace. It doesn't, you know, you want to hold good form, you know, so using a super thick stretch cord isn't really too beneficial. You know, you're not looking to only do 8 repetitions. What I like doing with these is actually just going off a clock. So if you're on the pool deck, just use the pace clock and, you know, do 30-second, 45-second, or 60-second, you know, intervals, you know, and just kind of hold them. And that really builds good, you know, kind of like strength endurance. And let me see, I'd say those are, you know, two of my favorite ones. There's a few others, you know, you can do, like, you know, straight arm between your legs. And that just, it's not as swim specific as the other two, but, you know, it just kind of works a little bit of your back muscles. And the other thing I like doing, too, a little bit, which is also nice to sometimes incorporate into a pre-swim routine or even a pre-race routine for your swim, is just having, you can do both arms or one arm at a time out in front, so you kind of step back so the stretch cord is really, you know, pretty tight, and you just kind of activate. So you just do the initial catch. So you're just kind of moving it towards you as if you're catching, and your forearm, with your forearm as well, and your elbow pops up, and then just release. So you're just kind of scooping, you know, imaginary water towards you or towards your chest, and you just kind of repeat that motion. And what that does is kind of really activate even your back muscles. You'll feel it a little bit, and it's a really nice drill I like to do, and it's definitely one that I know a lot of my athletes, and Sam uses that one for every single race. She'll go down with stretch cords, and she'll just do that and just kind of one arm at a time, just kind of activate, feel the muscles start to, okay, don't forget, here's the swim, you know, boom, feel it in the shoulder, feel it in the lats, you know, that kind of thing. And she'll just do those little kind of, you know, engaging the muscle, if you will, with the forearm press down, and then she'll go into the alternating arms and then the double arm one. So, yeah, very good exercises.
Cool. Cliff, that's great. Thank you for the call tonight, and thank you for everyone else who was on the call this evening, listening and everything like that. Cliff, we definitely enjoy you talking here, and love to have you here.
All right. Hey, this is great. Thanks so much.
All right. Cool. Rock on. All right, guys. We will talk to you later. The next live Triathlon Summit call we're going to have is actually going to be in 2 weeks. Next week we will not have a call, but we will be 2 weeks out from today. We're going to have Danny Dreyer from Chi Running. So with that, Cliff, where can they get some more information if they want to go to some of your camps or check you out for a coach?
www.cliffenglishcoaching.com.
All right. Good deal. So with that, that's all we got for tonight. Everyone have a great night. And, again, thank you, Cliff.
All right. Thanks, man. That was great.
All right. Peace. Bye-bye.
Bye.